Welcome in, latest episode of that SEC podcast. It's a Monday. Marler over here with Chris Marler, Locked On Cox, as we call him. Louisiana Sports Net. There's like 20 others, right? What's all your credentials? Why are you here?
Why am I here? Louisiana Sports Net, ESPN 104.5 Baton Rouge, Locked On Gamecocks, Fourth and Wrong podcast, but also starting this week, pretty excited. I will be appearing in Nashville, your hometown, and doing weekly karaoke down at the Sip and Paint. And we're going to be only doing this song.
Wait, are you really doing it? You coming to Nashville?
What's it? No, I'm not coming to Nashville. It's a joke.
Oh, man.
It's a good joke. I nailed it. Nailed it.
Get that cigar out of your mouth. You know what?
So much to talk about.
Yep. Well, hey, let's get right into it, man. I feel like the contenders are starting to separate. The pretenders are starting to fade in the SEC. So, I mean, contender. Let's do this just because we were already on the topic here. I just want to get this out of the way because I can't handle any more of Marler's tweets about statistics and the Tennessee was not really that close. What was your thoughts on DeBoering finally beating Tennessee? I mean, I didn't think he'd ever do it.
Yeah, it's been a whole year for sure. So here's what I didn't understand. Tennessee fans should probably tune out. I'll say that. I thought it was a good game. This feels kind of like not taking anything away from Alabama because there's nothing to take away. They just beat four ranked teams in a row in four straight weeks. The first time in SEC history that's ever happened. So it is beyond time. I'm getting booed over here by my fiance. But I mean, it's beyond time. They start giving, I think, DeBoer some credit. You talk about his record against ranked opponents. He's now 19-3 against ranked opponents. I forgot his record against ranked on ranked teams, but it's even better.
What about unranked? He's going to lose to Carolina. Is that what you're telling me?
I told you a couple weeks ago as a joke. I was like, that's the one they should be worried about because everyone else is ranked going into the season or going into these games. I think the concern, there's a concern for Alabama not being able to run the football. But, dude, also, if you're Tennessee and you know that, and you also know that their one weakness defensively is they can't stop the run, and you had success running the football, I was very confused as to why they didn't try to do a better job or a more consistent job at running the football, especially early in the game. I mean, late in the game, you had to throw the football. But all that said, I mean, give Tennessee credit because there's a lot of things that happened that – totally changed the momentum of the game. And I know their fans were upset about it. And I totally, thank you, Steve. I know they were upset about it. And listen, there's nothing to hang your heads low on. And if that interception on the 1 yard line doesn't happen, you might win that game and blah, 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 blah. But you know what else? That shit does happen. And it did happen. And you're the one that did it. So Joey Aguilar and every single Tennessee fan that's been in my mentions for weeks now, you're sleeping on Joey Aguilar. No, he turns the ball over too much.
It's not his fault.
Emily, yes, I don't. It's I do a good job of hiding it. But I think the thing that like he has been very, very consistent on is turning the football over. And we thought maybe he turned a corner against Arkansas in that, but you know it reared its ugly head again against Bama. But everybody sitting here from a Tennessee standpoint, I'm trying to be as professional as possible, Mike.
Look at Jeez Louise. He's a Tennessee fan. Read his comment. Can you read it out loud for us?
This Jeez Louise is a Tennessee fan? I thought he was a Mississippi State fan.
No, he's VFL right there.
If your Mondays are revolved are saved by Chris Marler, I pity your existence. Well, I tell you what, Jeez Louise. Here's the thing about the Tennessee fandom. And I saw this before the game. Which
great fans, best fans, by the way.
Yeah, totally. Which was, there are some good ones. But there was saw this before the game. People were like, I'm not even going to go to Tuscaloosa because I already know how this is going to turn out. SEC offices in Birmingham. Alabama was penalized.
They were right. They were right.
32 times for 240 yards in their last two, or 245 yards in their last two trips to Knoxville. There were a lot of flags in this game. I did not think that's what the outcome was dictated by at all. If you do, sure. And then also, the whole thing about outgaining a team buddy, like 91 of those yards, 100 yards they had at the end of the game in the last two scores, and they were down by 17. The game was over. It was in hand. But nonetheless, I thought both teams did some things really well. Bama just did a lot more things a lot better.
Yeah. Well, I think the game, again, all the stats anybody wants to bring up, it literally came down to, and of course, the pick six is included. Oh, there he goes. He got mad from all your comments. I can't see you anymore. Oh, there you go.
I don't know.
I think you're turning off your camera. But the game came down to this, Chris. Bama, 4 for 4 in the red zone for 28 points. Tennessee, 2 for 5 in the red zone with 14 points, which, of course, includes the pick six, the end of the game. They got the clock ran out on them. But, I mean, hell, that was literally the difference. Not the refs, not the total yardage. It was just execution.
Yeah, and again, I kept saying this with Vanderbilt. I kept saying it with Tennessee. I just thought of the four games we saw, Missouri, Vanderbilt, Georgia, and Tennessee, where they've had the four straight games against top 25 SEC teams. We saw Georgia shoot themselves in the foot against Bama, and they get down inside the 5-yard line. It's fourth and or inside the 10. It's 4th and 1, and they decide to do whatever that play was with Cash Jones. They did not run the ball when they got close to the goal line several times. It was like 4th and goal, I think, in the first half. And they're averaging 7 yards a carry, and they decided not to throw it then. It felt like that was an alarm for everyone, because if they just stuck to their guns and knew their identity of being able of what was working, they probably beat Alabama. And so I kept thinking, well, Vandy's not going to do that. Vandy got away from the run kind of early after the fumble. Missouri, Ahmad Hardy had 11 carries going into the fourth quarter. And then Tennessee, of course, I just thought that if you were going to have success for Tennessee, it was not going to come in through the passing game as much as it would from the run game. Keep in mind, too, Mike, like you think about the last two games they've beaten Alabama. It wasn't because of the passing game. I mean, Hendon Hooker, I know he had 5 touchdowns, but they spread you out. And the reason why that passing game was so open is because they had to pull all the safeties down, and you're making it a thinner and a lighter box in the middle of the field where they're able to run on. And you saw it especially last year. I was surprised they didn't have more of it on Saturday.
Is Bama the best team in the SEC, in your opinion?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think. Yeah. I mean, like, A&M is undefeated, and that's great. I think that's, like, really impressive, and hats off to Mike Elko. They're 7-0, and that deserves a ton of credit. But the two things I would say on that, one, the only knock I would have on A&M is you've gone on the road twice this season, and you've given up over 40 points in both of them. Two, you haven't played the same schedule, and I think that at some point, you and I talk to you about this all the time, especially after last season, especially with South Carolina. Winning games matters, but winning games against good opponents should matter, I think, even more. And again, if you don't think Bama should be ahead of them because they had the loss, the Florida State loss looks even worse every single week. Somehow Gus Malzahn just still trying to fucking stick it to Alabama. But the thing is, no matter what happened in week one, it's not just they're on a good run. 4 straight wins against 4 top 25 SEC teams without a single bye week. It's the only time in conference history that's ever happened. That's unbelievably impressive. So, yeah, I would think they need to be up there.
Mm-hmm. And then where does Tennessee go from here? 5-2. Some of the fans are acting like the season's done. And I'm not saying they're likely to make the playoffs, but, at Kentucky this week, Oklahoma at home, New Mexico State at home, at Florida. Florida just fired their coach, of course, and then Vanderbilt. It's not unreasonable to say they could beat all those teams, is it?
No, it's not. The idea that their season's over is kind of stupid. I mean, like, the two losses are both to teams that are probably going to make the playoff, probably. Mm-hmm. You got a win coming up this week. Then you get Oklahoma at home. I don't know if you watched the Oklahoma-South Carolina game. This isn't a knock on Oklahoma because they have one of the best defenses in the country, maybe the best in the SEC. I don't know if we learned that part against South Carolina because South Carolina's offense is garbage. But I will also tell you that's a beatable team. Like they haven't run the ball on anyone, and they were able to do it against South Carolina. But South Carolina is in the process of just rolling over and dying. South Carolina right now, as much as I hate to say it, and it's like that episode of The Office when Kevin is talking about when he gets back from the summer. He's like, oh, this summer was awesome. I got a turtle, and then I ran over the turtle, but I was able to glue it and tape it back together, and then I stepped on the turtle, and it died again. That's like the middle. South Carolina's in the process of the stepping on part. They're already broken and dead, but they're just in the process of rolling over and dying now. So, yeah, man, I think that
And real quick, I would like to credit you. If anybody is not already subscribed and watching the Locked On Gamecocks podcast, you need to go over there and do it. But go watch Chris Marler, he's had a couple of meltdown videos and he's not allowed to use profanities. And you could just see how much of a struggle it is for him not to use those. I mean, that in itself is a reason to go watch the last couple Locked On Gamecocks shows.
I appreciate you saying that. And y'all, for real, go subscribe. It helps me be able to afford my fiance because I got to pay for her by the day. You know what I mean?
Oh, she's one of them.
Yeah, she, I mean, you know, she's Korean? Not from Russia, but
okay.
No, the thing about the podcast, I almost sent you one of these this morning. Is I was doing one yesterday, and I was like, it's total. And I'm like, I just want to say, like, it's fucking bullshit. It's fucking bullshit. And I'm just like, I just pause for like 4 seconds, and I'm like, crap. It's crap.
Well, you know what's not crap? Shout out our buddy JR, the legend. He shows up no matter morning, noon, or day.
Legend. Cousin JR has done it again.
Thank you, JR. He gifted to Paul Cockrell. I think it's a relative of Chris here. Paul, welcome to the family, courtesy of JR. So he's a big dog. Now, let's talk about them dog. Don't bark at me. Let's talk about the, you know, this was arguably the biggest game in the conference. And defense was completely optional as Georgia won 43-35. What does this tell you about Georgia that cannot be killed, except by Bama, I guess. But and then Ole Miss, I mean, hell, literally scored first five possessions on all touchdowns, yet yeah. They couldn't win this damn game. What are your biggest takeaways from this one?
I mean, well, yeah, I think Evan Grimes is up. What's up, Evan? I think that's a... Like they like Georgia fans should probably issue a brief apology or a lengthy one actually to Mike Bobo. That was incredible. I thought Ole Miss, like this was their game to lose because it wasn't like they weren't just having or they were just having success. I mean, five straight drives with a score that has never happened against the Kirby Smart defense since he's been in Athens. And when you needed it most. I mean, that blue is painful, dude. I mean, how do you go from five straight touchdowns to six plays for 1 yard and barely over a minute and 15 seconds in timer off the clock? I think Ole Miss still is a very good football team. I think they have a lot to be proud of in that game. I was surprised they didn't have more yards, even though they had such an impressive, impressive amount of drives to start the game, like we said. But also, Georgia did a tremendous job of controlling the clock, not just in the fourth quarter, but for most of the game, extending drives, which gave their defense rest, which is what, you know, like usually against a Lane Kiffin team, that's something that's probably pretty important because they have you running all over the field. And I know they score from far, but usually they take a little bit more time off the clock as well. The situation, though, they had offensively, man, Gunnar Stockton, what a time for him to have his best start of his career, 84% completion percentage. For him to go out there and score five touchdowns, zero turnovers, thought that was impressive. Nate Frazier ran the ball really, really well. I wish they would start getting that kid going a little bit more often. And then just when it felt more vintage Georgia in some ways, obviously not defensively. There's some issues defensively they have got to figure out. But I don't think the sky is falling as much as some of the Georgia fans think they are defensively. I will also say the vintage part of it for Georgia was that Kirby death march at the end of the game. When you're down 35-26 and the final score ends up being 43-35 and you're able to take the football and impose your will offensively and push people around that offensive line that's been a little bit of a liability for most of the year, I thought it was awesome. And they converted on fourth. They were able to get big key plays. And I'll tell you what they also didn't do. They never looked hesitant. Or skittish in their play calling or offensively, even when they were down. When they were trying to put the game away, like some of the play calls they had, the play call to Zachariah Branch on the right sideline was huge towards the end of the game. I thought it was awesome. I thought it was an awesome game.
What was a bigger takeaway you think for the Dogs? The fact that, you shouted out Gunnar Stockton there as you should, that he's a big time quarterback and we can win these high level matchups with him, or that Georgia's defense, even though, man, I don't know, I'm sure you were seeing it, but a lot of reaction of like, man, Schumann, get this clown out of here. Kirby's defense, not what it was, but that they came up big and made the stops when they had to. What's the bigger takeaway from this game?
So I think Georgia fans got very excited about that stretch from 2021 to 2023 where, you know, it felt like they were never going to lose again. And really, they hardly did lose, right? And so you go through 3 years. And you lose one game to Bama before that SEC championship loss. And you know, really 3 years, two losses, which was as many natties as they won during that time. I get it. Like, I fully get it. They're not used to being in the situation, I think, where they're like worried about having to lose again because they've had so few of those games. I get the overreaction. I don't think it's going to stop. They've been like this since Bobo was first there back in like 2007 or whatever his first tenure was. But I think also Schumann, there's a concern there because Schumann, one, he gets more FaceTime than any defensive coordinator I have fucking ever seen. It's so weird how much they put the camera on him. But he's got some stuff to figure out because you have all the talent, right? You have all the talent in the world. But dude, have you ever seen people work jobs. I'll tell you what, I wanted to be a fucking firefighter astronaut. Found out that wasn't real. Guess what? We all get jobs. Anyway, so I think that the biggest concern I have for Georgia moving forward, and there's a lot of strengths here too, that I'm not just trying to like be negative at all, but I think that's also kind of where Georgia fans tend to live because that win was good, but there's some clear things they still need to shore up before if they're going to go on a run. I don't see anyone else on that schedule besides Georgia Tech that's going to give them any issues though. So not they
Texas?
Are getting fried right
Texas in the, defense?
No fucking chance Texas okay. stands is close in that game. Georgia won that game by 14 points. But I think the bigger question is that those cornerbacks, and you've seen it for 2 years now for under Kirby Smart, it might be the worst tandem of quarterbacks I've seen under Kirby Smart, maybe ever.
Hey, what about Ole Miss? I don't want to say they've been exposed. Hell, it was a high level game. They were winning going into the fourth quarter. They could have had it, but Trinidad again maybe got a moment was a little too big. Now they're going to Oklahoma. And I've already kind of put this out there. You will probably disagree with me, but I think if Ole Miss loses at Oklahoma, they're not making the playoff. What's your thoughts on that?
I disagree. I mean, I think they're a shoe-in. I they could lose this week. I think they're fine. I do love what Mississippi State's doing right now. Mississippi State's been a fun team to watch.
Yeah, in Florida?
But they're not going to lose.
How big of a distraction is that going to be?
What?
Kiffin to Florida. Playing Florida? Oh. That's going to be... Hey, it's been a distraction before. Just saying.
Yeah, I don't see it being an issue because, we can get into the Florida job. I'm sure we will. I'm not saying Ole Miss is a better job because I think long term it's definitely not. If all things are clicking, but all things aren't clicking at Florida. I posted this yesterday. People thought I was being a dick, but it's just the honest truth. If you want to know how unstable and toxic that whole job and situation in Gainesville is right now, their choice to be the backup interim coach Jabbar Luke that opportunity was taken away because earlier this season against LSU he slapped a player in the face. So it's like there were so many things foundationally and fundamentally wrong with the Napier tenure there that I think that I don't know why Lane, especially if they make the playoff, which I think they will. If they make the playoff, what's the reason for leaving? Like, what would be the reason for leaving that job at Ole Miss when you have such a long leash and things like, you know, that you're able to be in charge of and able to do? I'm assuming it'll be in his contract that he's allowed to fucking go do shirtless hot yoga on camera before games. That's just what he does now. But I mean, like, I just feel like he's been able to find himself by getting himself a little bit longer of a leash in Oxford. I don't see him taking a job that gives him less freedom.
I'll tell you why. And I'm not saying he takes it, right? I've been pretty adamant that I don't think he will. But if he does, there's only one reason. Is because he does not believe he can win a national championship at Ole Miss. And the belief is that he could do it at Florida.
At Florida over Ole Miss.
Well, I mean, because it's been done. You know, it has been done, right? And recently, you know, by multiple coaches. And I don't know. I just think maybe they think they can attract. I was getting into I think people, when they see like Twitter engagement, they're like, oh, these guys are beefing. Brooks Austin. I mean, hell, he's elite, right? But he was just saying that, you know, you can attract a lot better talent to Florida than you can Oxford, as evidence of Billy Napier not being a good coach, but still recruiting at an elite level. So, you know, that is a case to be made for that, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's a better recruiting, it's a more fertile recruiting ground for sure. I mean, you go out in your backyard, you find a 3 or 4 star in Florida.
I think it's easier to attract talent there. I think that goes without saying.
I guess. I mean, you're probably right. I think, and the resources should probably be a little bit further. I think the question is, like, what is Ole Miss going to be willing to pay and invest into this? Because, mm-hmm. I mean, like, the ball is in their court. I think if they go to Lane Kiffin and they say, listen, we're going to give you $11.5 million to stay. We'll give you this amount for your staff, and we'll give you this amount for your NIL budget that you're going to have every single year. Because here's the thing that people don't understand about Florida either. Everyone keeps talking about how it's so easy to win there. But Scott Strickland, going into the 2024 season, he had made 8 hires as the AD at Florida. 2 of the 8 hires had a winning record in SEC play for their respective teams. The men's tennis coach and then the men's basketball coach, Todd Golden. 2 had winning records against SEC opponents. 2, the same number, were dismissed and fired because of abuse of athletes. Like, that's catastrophically bad to have 6 of 8 hires have losing records and bad. Like, not just like, oh, they were, you know, 489 their win percentage. It was bad, bad. So I don't really understand why he would ever be in charge of making the next hire anyway. If he's able to backdoor what should be the end of his tenure with a national championship from Todd Golden and then land Lane Kiffin, his job might be saved, I guess. But if you're Ole Miss, you just say, how much do you want? What's reasonable? And how do we figure out from our boosters what we can do to bring like what we can bring in annually and consistently, like that is a bottom line. We're never going to have to worry about anything lower than that. Right. To keep this thing going. Because here's the thing, too. Kiffin might not be the best coach in terms of, like, winning the big games. And he faltered on the season last year. Who's going to replace him at Ole Miss and give them anywhere close to the success they've had?
Dan Mullen. No, I'm just kidding. Because Mississippi's here. Hey, shout out.
Showing up.
Steven up.
Boys in Tuscaloosa. It's Steven up. Roll Tide.
Appreciate you, Stephen Up. He gifted Joshua Martin. Joshua, welcome to the family. And he also gave us $10, Chris, specifically for you.
Thank God.
So we're going to split this if you can hook him up. I still need that dime, Marler. Help a brother. And then, hey, shout out Cam. He gave us $10. Mike, I'd like you and Marler's take on how stupid of a play call Jeff Lebby made. I'm still in shambles. For anybody that missed it, a final score, Florida 23, Mississippi State 21. Mississippi State was well within field goal range. They have a very good kicker. And for some reason, they asked Blake Shapen to throw the football, and he was intercepted by a freaking nose tackle to end the game. I mean, I would never fire a coach for one call, but that's about as close as I'd come to it.
I disagree. I thought it was a good defensive play call for one. Dropping a defensive lineman in coverage is, I mean, hard to see.
Why are we throwing the football?
They had also just missed a field goal right before that, so I understand wanting to move closer. I probably would have ran the football. Yes, it's a questionable play call for sure, but like throwing an interception to a defensive lineman, that was a very good defensive play call as well. And I think it was just one of those, like, we're better, the best play call or best team on that specific play won. I would have ran the football because this is a hypothetical and I love to be right. So I will say that you're not wrong there. I will also say, I thought maybe I'm fucking stupid. I was drinking. The nerves were a nervin on Saturday, Mike, for that game. I was drinking early. Maybe I'm just dumb. Oh boy, hit the monitor here. Maybe I'm just dumb. I definitely thought he made the first field goal.
Yeah.
Am I crazy on that?
Yeah, you're a little crazy. I thought he missed it, but hey, I wouldn't put it past the SEC refs to miss something. You know what?
Yeah. Well, the guy who whose goalpost or whatever it was over, he immediately looked to the other guy, and it was for way longer than they usually do. He was like, I don't know. Like, what do you do? You go first. Count of three.
Liquid was there. He said I was 5 rows up. He missed it.
Oh, fuck you, Liquid. You don't know shit.
Bo says your camera doesn't like you, Chris.
Yeah, I know, dude. Bo, you and my camera both, brother. I don't know. I just got a new camera. Allie watched me do the show last week and was like, you move too much and you're shaking the desk way too often. And so the camera's constantly moving. We're just going to get you a better camera. And I was like, I'll take the camera, but do you think that's going to stop me from shaking the table? No.
It's the dime bag. I got it. But hey, shout out Skunkworks. He gifted a membership to Joanne Nix. Joanne, welcome to the family. Hopefully related to Derek Nix, outstanding SEC cousin over there. And then B-Dad, loyal B-Dad in the Sooners, Chris. He gifted to Larry Fisherman. That's Chris's other account there. Shout out the Fisherman. Welcome to the family. And then my favorite account on here, at least the name-wise, Chris, Cousin Shane Shirt. Shane always wears the same damn shirt.
Brother.
What's up, gentlemen? Where do you stand on Stockton's chance of a Heisman season?
He's going to have to get some better numbers.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I don't know that he's a... Now, after the Tennessee game, I was starting to buy it, but I don't think he's a realistic candidate.
Why over that? Over... what's going on over there? Marla's the only one that makes Shane look good. I can't tell if that's a negative thing or a positive thing. I can only assume it's not positive. But no, I think the Gunner thing, he's coming off a 5-touchdown game, but he's also admittedly behind other I love you, Liquid Flames. He's behind everyone else. Like, I don't know. I think they can easily go 11-1. Maybe that Georgia, dude, imagine if that Georgia Tech game is for like, I mean, I don't even know what the numbers are.
Is it Tech number 7 in the country right now?
Georgia Tech is number 7 in the country. I've confused everyone, including Bo, about my origins and lore, being from Atlanta, growing up in a household of Bama fans, going to Georgia College and State University, doing a Locked On Gamecock show from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I fucking love Georgia Tech so much, growing up in the shadows of that stadium.
How does
so
that, awesome. That guy's got to be a SEC candidate, wouldn't you think, or no?
I don't see why he would leave. I don't see why he would leave Georgia Tech. Okay. I mean, there's reasons, but I'm just gonna be very biased and hope for the best that he's not gonna leave. Because I don't think there's a lot of money in that donor base. There's only so, like, they don't, if they go back to mediocrity, it's not going to kill that fan base like it would others. But it's his alma mater. He cares, and you can tell that he cares. I think he's been awesome. The game this weekend, man, they're a 1.5. They're undefeated going to Duke, and they're an underdog. And it was 27-10 late in that game. They got the garbage score touchdown, a lot like Tennessee tried to with their yards anyway. I don't know why. I mean, there's reasons why he would leave. That's also a tough sell, because it's like, if you're trying to pull him out of his alma mater when things are great, I don't see that happening.
Hey, well, we're getting some Mizzou questions, so let's pivot to them. They won in overtime 23-17 on the plains here. Chris, I was told Auburn's an elite home field advantage. They're 2-9 against Power 4 competition under Hugh Freeze, so I don't know how elite it is these days. But thoughts on this matchup that literally could have went either way, but Missouri made the plays and Auburn didn't, and that's kind of a theme of the season.
First off, shout out Emily Powell, who's my favorite listener here each and every week. There's a lot of good ones in here. But yeah, Georgia College State University, go Bobcats. Love it. Love to see it. We don't talk about the Bobcats nearly enough on here, Mike. It's probably because they don't have a football team. Still undefeated. Love that. But I'm not going to stop with the ACC talk. Stop spelling your name with two O's, you weirdo. What's going on there, Jordan? You know what's the worst name ever, Mike? And I hope there's somebody in the chat with this name, Brennan. I fucking hate that name so much. It sounds like you're starting a car. Like, Brennan! Why are there so many N's so close together? Anyway, moving on, back to the question at hand.
That's the drugs talking, folks.
I feel so bad. Shout out Milledgeville, Georgia, baby. It's there for 6 years. I feel so bad for Auburn fans. And that's hard to do. Like my fiance is obviously an Auburn grad. She said to me last week, I think I brought it up on the show, and it was like, it felt such like a, like, not a bless your heart, but just like, oh man, type moment. Cause she was like, look at our fucking atmosphere. I was in the stadium for LSU, South Carolina, LSU winning that game only by 7 late in the third, early fourth quarter. Place empties. It's supposed to be one of the best atmospheres in the country. And for big games it is, But Auburn fans show up every fucking week. No matter who the opponent is, no matter how bad the team is, no matter how bad their own team is, they show up every week and they give this incredible atmosphere. And every single week, Hugh Freeze pulls down his pants and takes a huge shit on that entire fan base with his play calling and his decision making. And then afterwards, after he forgets to wipe his own ass, he somehow blames everyone else for why it stinks. And it's unbelievable that this dude still has a job at 1-12 versus ranked teams. They are 0-4 for the third straight time. Anybody that has a vote of confidence on this guy at this point, it's pathetic. Like I would feel better if he came out and he said, "This is my fault. This is not up to our standard." But instead, every week it's like, "Well, you know, so-and-so, we're so close." And that's fucking bullshit. Last week when he was talking about calling up his other coaching buddies, calling up Butch Thompson, the baseball coach, "I've just never seen anything like this in my 25 years of coaching." I asked him, "You know, you ever seen a team lose this much?" Stop fucking feeling sorry for yourself, okay? Like, just go figure out how to fix it. Like,
They reward those great fans you reference there on the plains. They say, "Hey, let's rip away a home game. Let's put it in Atlanta for some NIL money."
Yeah, but I mean, they also they're going to need some money. Listen, like if Auburn fans are upset about that, I get it. I truly do. But you're also sitting as a part of a fucking program that has decided to invent the buyout game in college sports. Like, Tommy Tuberville was like the first one I remember having that happen when he had like five. Yes, by the way, fantastic whiskey. I finally got it. It was so good. Thank you so much to Tennessee Legend Distillery and Kingsnake Bourbon Whiskey or Whiskey. What is it? Bourbon Whiskey? I'm an idiot. It was fantastic, man. Thank you so much. Haven't tried the Blackberry yet, though.
Shane went through all of his.
Auburn has
But what about Missouri? You've not even mentioned them again. Going on the road, I mean they're still in the well in the playoff hunt here.
Can you just bring up my tweet yesterday about Eli Drinkwitz, please? Because I'm so upset that this did not break the internet.
Let me try to find it real quick.
No, I love Missouri. Everyone here does. Chase is in the audience. Zion Young was awesome. That offensive line, they ate them alive the entire day. I think the concern here, it's a huge win, being able to win on the road when you don't have your A game. It's your first road game of the year, too, which is kind of crazy. But, I mean, you're going to have a few more of those, and then probably in lesser environments, but against better teams. So you got to figure out ways to get better. Huge game this weekend in Vandy. But I also think that, like, there's also something to be said for as bad as they looked. There's something to be said for being able to figure out a way to win on the road when Bo Prabula is not even close to being at his best. And also, look at, I mean, God dang, dude. Just the best tweet I've ever had. The best tweet I've ever twatted.
Live look at me when the hibachi chef asks, "Who wants some shrimp?" That is good.
Man, oh, that's so good. Come on, here we go.
You should retire after that one.
For real. Now, go back to that other way. That was much better. Go back to the other portrait like mode thing. Yes. Oh, that's worse. Never mind.
I hate that.
Like a cat lady in Florida. No, I think that the concern is if like you're able to win, which is good, without your best effort probably and a ton of mental mistakes and shooting yourself in the foot. But this is the second straight week that Ahmad Hardy hasn't looked like the Heisman Trophy contender we thought he was going to be. And if Bo Prabula is not – Is this version? I mean, he's six interceptions in his last four SEC games that he's played. Or I'm sorry, his last four games that he's played, four in the last 2 weeks alone. If he is that version, that's a scary thing. And then the other thing I have for it too, man, is like, I mean, because if you watch the end of that Bama game, he's got a dude standing wide ass open on the sideline, and they're a completed pass maybe from being 7-0, but the concern now becomes, like, if he's not seeing the field well, and then you're also not able to depend on Hardy, where does the offense go from here? Luckily, the defense has been outstanding.
Right. All right. Hey, we've gone this far. We haven't even talked about them LSU Tigers. Come on, going down to Nashville and losing with those big L's, 31-24. Vanderbilt's for real? LSU, probably not. What's your thoughts?
So the LSU stuff is very frustrating. I just got out of the Brian Kelly press conference down here.
Great questions, by the way. I thought they were outstanding.
Are you just saying that? I had two of them.
I know. I think he's starting to warm up to you. That was my takeaway.
We're best friends. We're going to hang out. I was thinking about this earlier too. If he ends up getting fired, I'm going to be so upset because I go into this. I hate this guy's profile name. So bad. It's so good, but it makes me so uncomfortable. So I think the LSU side of it, I'll start there. Actually, let's start with the Vandy side. Let's give them credit because I feel like I think everyone here, there's no disrespecting Vandy at this point. I think everyone is respecting Vanderbilt. I don't think people are still in that wagon or that I don't know, headspace. They're like, well, they're not any good or they haven't played anybody. I keep comparing it to like Indiana last year, like where it's like Indiana didn't really play anybody.
Mm-hmm.
They end up having to play ranked opponents. They got embarrassed. But with Vanderbilt, they've played a much harder schedule than Indiana did a year ago. But it's also still very similar because it's not some cute, fun underdog story. thanks, Brodo. It's not some fun, cute underdog story. Like Vanderbilt's legit. Like Vanderbilt is legit. And I said this earlier, I wrote an article about it. I'll post it later from LouisianaSports.net, shameless plug, go check it out. But I said this in the article that's up there right now. What do good football teams do, Mike? They own the line of scrimmage. Vanderbilt has allowed 5 sacks all season, which is the fewest in the SEC. I think they had the fewest allowed last year as well. They also have 50 tackles for loss, which ranks in the top 5 in the conference on the other side of the ball. What else do good football teams do? They protect the football. They have 6 total turnovers, and they had 7 last year, which led the entire country. Good teams don't beat themselves. Vandy has just 14 penalties in conference play this year. That's the second fewest in the league. Good teams also have elite quarterback play, and we all know by now how good Diego Pavia is. The thing that makes this Vandy team so difficult to play against is, and Brian Kelly brought this up too, they're like playing a triple option team because those teams control the clock. They're not in a hurry to snap the football, and they do stuff on every single play that's unique, creative, and you have so many things happening that your eyes have to be in the right place defensively if you're going to have any sort of ability to be successful on that side of the ball. Vandy held the ball for however long, I think 37 minutes in this game, and LSU was only able to get off 49 total plays. I mean, they just squeeze you. And when that happens for a team, especially that struggles on offense like LSU, when that starts to happen and you start realizing, hey, it's the second half. We've had, like, you know, I think they had 5 total possessions going into the fourth quarter. And I think that Vandy hadn't even punted except for maybe I think the first punt. Yeah, the first punt was in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. So, like, when a team that's already not very good on offense – starts seeing that clock and like we're realizing like the chances and opportunities are getting slimmer and slimmer as the clock goes on. I think you start playing into their favor in terms of you start to panic a little bit and then you start like going out of your own comfort zones, which already aren't very great with how bad and limited you are offensively. And they just kind of squeeze you, man. It's like, it's a boa constrictor type thing. And it's really, really impressive.
But now, not as impressive. Or who's not impressive, I should say, is LSU and that toughness. Well, I mean, what happened there? I mean, I realize Vanderbilt's tough, but that's got to be pretty humbling for LSU fans to be kind of humbled by Vanderbilt, particularly on the line of scrimmage.
Yeah. I mean, because I think there's also a part of it for LSU fans. I was told this going into the game and like talking to people around the program. It was like, I think that you have the concerns on offense, but they took a step forward against South Carolina. And also, like, the defense is still there. The defense travels. Even without Whit Weeks, the defense should travel, and they should have a game plan because Blake Baker's been awesome, and so is this defense. And you've got dudes everywhere. To go into that game, though, and the concern was if they lose, the fan base has zero confidence if they lost to Vandy that you're going to be able to figure out a way to win out and get in the playoff, let alone beat 2 of the 3 games against A&M, Oklahoma, and Alabama. I'm dumb enough to think they can win this weekend. I think they can also beat Oklahoma. I'm not in a place right at all where I'm going to say right now they can beat Alabama. And that whole dream might die this weekend with A&M coming to town. But like I said, A&M also has gone on the road twice this year and given up 40 points to 2 teams. So I think the LSU, man, the scary part is from this year is you don't have an identity that you can really lean on. You don't have a run game that you can lean on. The passing game hasn't been great. The best part of the passing game has now become your option at tight end with Tre'Davious Green, but you brought in all of these receivers. You should have the best receiving corps in America with how much talent you brought in, and it's nowhere to be found. You're also not giving a ton of looks and targets to Aaron Anderson, even though he was a little bit banged up. Nick Anderson is nowhere to be found. Barrion Brown had a good game, but like we're not seeing these games with these like elite players. Like Chris Hilton's gone missing, and the offensive line apparently is still as bad at running the football this year as they were a year ago. And it's just been bad. And so I think the bigger concern for LSU is this. If you spend $18 million on this roster, which is exactly what he said, what Brian Kelly said they spent, you spend $18 million on that roster and it yields you an 8 or 9 win season, you end up in the fucking Music City Bowl. It is very hard to go back in this day and age to those same boosters the next year and say, hey, need more money. And no, we didn't make any changes at the head coaching position because that's a $53 million buyout, but we need more money so we can go get a roster. Because who's the backup quarterback? Michael Van Buren? There's no fucking way they're going to go into next season with him as the starter. They're going to have to go into the portal again. They're going to have to find a quarterback. And then the worst part about the Bryce Young thing, which I thought, or Bryce Underwood thing, which I thought was like a blessing in disguise at first because it freed up all this money that you're able to spend when you lost him to Michigan. Well, now you don't have a quarterback for next year. And like you've got a guy for 2027, and you're still trying to get Elijah Haven, who's the number one quarterback in that class. But like you don't have a dude coming in that you're super high on, and you don't want to start a true freshman anyway in what could end up being Brian Kelly's year that's finally make or break.
Mm-hmm. Hey, we were giving some love to Tennessee Legend. They gave it right back to us, Chris. Shout out. The Legend gave us 5 new members. It's just Church. Jonathan Hayden, Crimson Tanky. That's probably your brother. David Russell and Emmanuel 2G's Leonard. Welcome to the family, courtesy of old Tennessee Legend. Well, we went this far. Someone said Clark Lee is going to be a Tennessee Legend by the end of the year.
Wait, Michael Lynn said he didn't realize I had ties to Lexington, South Carolina. I was wrong about you. I don't know what you were wrong about, for one, because it sounds like that was a negative thought. But yeah, my lived in Lexington, South Carolina for quite some time. Mom's a pastor over there. Don't tell her I say so many bad words on this show.
Well, we've gone this far because I didn't want to get the meltdown right off the bat. But, what the hell are we doing here? Shane Beamer's melting down. You already gave your flowers to Oklahoma, kind of. So, man, Lenore Sell. I mean, this is with perhaps most gifted quarterback in the country. We can't generate much of anything. Is there any hope for them Gamecocks?
No, there's not. And I hate to say it because it's like I was so high on this team coming in, and I knew there were so many question marks, and I probably was a little bit too bought into the Kool-Aid for what they had coming back than I should have been. But here's the other part too, Mike. When you have arguably the best player offensively, and he was in the SEC to close last year, like at the end of last season, he was. And then you have arguably the highest ceiling of any defensive player, especially in his class, in Dylan Stewart coming back. When you have both those pieces coming back for South Carolina, you would tend to think that you're going to have a really good season. And we had such a track record with Beamer where they didn't have any misses in these portal guys. They didn't have a ton of misses. And then the development they've been able to have where they were able to take these 3 stars, especially on defense, and be able to put them and turn them into top 50 NFL draft picks. And like all these things, sure, there were question marks offensively, and especially across the offensive line. And sure, there were players that you needed to replace that were really, really good. But there wasn't a ton of reason to think that because I kept maintaining this going into the season. Everyone that said South Carolina was, you lost too many players, you weren't going to be any good, and blah, blah, blah. Those same people were saying that the year before. And so, like, I'm not trying to discredit their preseason prediction, but it felt, and I still believe this, it was way more from a dismissive, not doing my homework mindset of like, well, yeah, they just lost too many players, they're not going to be able to replace them. Well, you didn't know the name of those players the year before. Like, no one knew fucking Demetrius. Like, I didn't hear Ari Wasserman talk about Demetrius Knight Jr. before the season. No one thought Kyle Kennard was going to end up being the SEC Defensive Player of the Year. But you go into this year with all of this wealth of talent, you bring in this recruiting class with arguably the best receiving class of any team in the country in that recruiting class. Those players are nowhere to be found. Russell Faison has not been able to get going. The offensive line is somehow fucking worse than it was the last 2 years, which is saying a lot since they got 41 sacks in each of those years. The offensive play calling is such a fucking joke. And I'm so glad that you give me the opportunity on this show to be able to say what I really want to say unfiltered and not on Locked On. I love my Locked On job. Love it to death. But being able to actually say cuss words when talking about this, it's the only way to actually be able to communicate how I feel about it. Mike Shula ran the ball on the first drive for 50 fucking yards, Mike. 50 fucking yards they had on the first drive of the game against Oklahoma. Do you want to guess how many they had at the end of the game?
54.
54.
Yeah.
54. First and goal from the 9-yard line. You are the worst rushing offense in the entire fucking conference, and you run three straight plays from first and goal from the 9. Do you want to guess? One, it's already fucking stupid. But two, do you want to guess how many of those run plays went to Lenore Sellers, your best fucking player?
None.
Zero. Zero. And then, just to make it all worse, you sit here at going into, I think, the second half or something like that. You had, or maybe it was the second quarter, you've had 13 trips, 13 consecutive trips across the 50-yard line that yielded three total points dating back to the LSU game. And that's fucking pathetic. Like, it's just so bad. It's just so bad. And to sit here and figure out, like with Shane Beamer's response to it, and I understand that he and Jack Veltri had a conversation about it, and Veltri didn't feel like he owed him an apology or anything like that. But here's the issue, man. You're frustrated having to answer a question, and I get it. But everyone watching it is even more frustrated with having to watch the same fucking bullshit because everyone knows the problem. Everyone knows the problem. And just because you made a change on the offensive line does not mean that it's unreasonable to ask if there are other changes happening, because this entire season, even if they fucking won out, Mike, even if they won out, it would still be an abject failure from what the expectations were coming into the season. Like, it's so fucking stupid. And now you are staring at 4-8 directly in the fucking face. You're not going to beat Alabama. You're not going to beat Oklahoma. You're not going to beat Ole Miss. Do not clip that. And now the biggest win you have left on the schedule is if you're able to beat a bad Clemson team. And I swear to fucking God, dude, if the end of this year, the Clemson game, which they could win easily, as we've seen how bad they've been, and it's at home. But by then, I question how up the fans are even going to be for that game because of how badly beaten down they've been. You saw them booing early in the second quarter. It feels like there's people that feel like Beamer's kind of lost the fan base. And I'm getting texts from people in not the highest of places, but high places, saying that like the murmurs are becoming louder and louder with how frustrated they are with him. And you know what you could do to stop it? One, make a fucking change, or admit that like this is something that is an issue, instead of lashing out irrationally and projecting, as my therapist would say, at a reporter for doing their fucking job. And the idea, the scary part for South Carolina, the doomsday scenario, I'm going to do a show on it later today, is I think Beamer does want to stay. I truly do. But there are sources that have said with Beamer that if he ends up leaving to go to Virginia Tech, it would be because the lack of feeling wanted and still like and appreciated by South Carolina and the fans. If you are telling me that like your happiness and people being nice to you after you are shitting the bed every single Saturday is what's going to make or break you staying or going, now you've given this power to somebody where in a year where there's so many, I think 11 openings right now for college coaches and different programs around the country. Now you have to sit here and make sure you're not behind the eight ball so you can go out and try to get somebody if he does decide to leave. And if it's being based off his feelings, well, we've seen how he acts like emotionally. Like you saw it with Brett Bielema last year in the bowl game, and you saw it, you know, like in the postgame press conference. I like Beamer. I think he's the guy that needs to be there. But I also think it's okay to sit here saying sometimes like, hey man, like you're fucking up. Like you're not, like things aren't going well. And that's okay if you use it as like a building block to get better. But the first part of anyone that's got an issue is you have to fucking look at yourself in the mirror and acknowledge there's a fucking issue. And there is. And just end of fucking rant.
Wow. Beautiful. Standing ovation, even though I'm sitting. Well, you know who else gets one? We haven't talked much. A&M 7-0 A&M. You know, again, it's not pretty necessarily, but well, when they needed to, they got some stops and they were damn near unstoppable. Of course, everybody looks unstoppable against Arkansas defense, but I think just because Taylen Green's just such a freak show, they were able to keep it close. And now we got a huge game looming, as you already referenced, A&M at LSU. What's your early thoughts on that one?
I've been off on LSU, I think, this year, because it's just there's too much talent, Mike. There's just too much talent for them to be this average. I like A&M. I love Mike Elko, dude. I know he's built like fucking Grimace. but I mean, look at that body type is, I'm not one to fat shame, but my God, he is just, he's built like an iceberg. It's right here and then boom. He's done such an incredible job. I love what their hits in the portal have been great. The receivers, especially, I think Marcel Reed's been really, really good, really impressive. I expected him to put up really good numbers against an Arkansas defense that was bad. I think the question now becomes, there's some things that our A&M does defensively. They have the SEC sack leader in their front four, and there's some things they do defensively that they do well. But both times, that's good. Yeah, that's fair. Both times they have left College Station, they have been in games where they've given up 40 points. Now, those are two much better offenses than LSU's is. But I will also say, I don't think they destroy LSU. I think this game goes one of two ways. I think LSU can win it if it's close, because they're able to finally start figuring out some things offensively. Now, keep in mind, there's nothing they have done this season that would make me feel that's going to necessarily happen and put a lot of confidence in it, besides what I've seen A&M do on the road. The other outcome, I think, is this. If A&M comes in here into Death Valley and goes up 14-0 or goes up by double digits early, that place will empty immediately. Just living here, people told me about it before I got here. They were like, there's a couple things going to happen to Baton Rouge. You're going to get even fatter because of the sodium and the red beans and rice. But also, the sky is falling after a loss. And I think that the fan base is so fed up with where they're at. And I think it started probably in 2023 when you look at the talent you had offensively, and if you just had a defense, you could have made it, you know, much further along. And I think you look at what they have now.
Can they win it back though, by beating A&M? Are the fans back in?
A little bit, but then I think just with where the negativity is right now, I tell you what, if they go out there and they win 41-24 or 41-30, the only way you get this fan base back in,
I don't
is
think
not
things could win. Score 40.
What's that?
How? There's no way in hell they score 40.
Well, if they extend the game into 8 overtimes, maybe. but I think also if you figure out, you'll have to not only win this game to get them back, but you need to win it in a way that's either really big or in a, like, so it's like impressive, or it's in a way that you have not done so this season, and then that would be scoring a bunch of points, the offense putting up a bunch of yards, and finally looking efficient, and Garrett Nussmeier looking himself.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know if you saw this today, but Sarkisian, he was asked if he's thinking about giving up play calling. And by like every metric, Texas offense is just complete dog shit. I know it's easy to jump on Arch Manning. He didn't look very good. He only completed 44% of his passes against Kentucky. I mean, this is the worst drive chart I've ever seen. The one touchdown was a 5-yard drive.
You hit the ball that many times?
Yeah.
How many drives is that?
14. So 14 drives and 3 field goals, essentially, is what you got.
Mike, I added it up. It's 14. You were right.
Well, it says at the bottom, total drives. That's where
God
I look. But
damn it. I didn't see that.
but basically, point being, I don't know if you saw this today, but he was – I mean, they're literally questioning him, should you still be calling the plays? And he said, of course, as all these guys say, you know, that's why I got this job. I ain't giving it up. So, man, is it time to panic in Austin, or is that just like a one-off?
It's a one-off. I mean, like not the Kentucky game. This season might be a one-off. Yeah. Look at the rest of the scores. First off, and fuck off, Texas fans. If this is the breaking point for you, because you had a close win that you should have lost in Lexington, like – the idea that this is somehow I will never ever blame Steve Sarkisian should be calling plays until they pry the sheet out of his cold dead hands. Like, he's the best offensive mind in all of college football, along with Lane Kiffin and Ryan Day. And
I got him as number 11 in the SEC.
God, that fucking pissed me off still. It's not even like you think about like what he did as an OC. You think about the offenses he's had at Texas and what they've been able to do. Like, you think about like the points he's been able to score this year at times. Like it hasn't looked efficient, but part of that is because he has a quarterback that is extremely overrated that you idiots in Austin decided was going to be the best quarterback in the history of the world because he played a bunch of fucking make-a-wish kids in high school at Newman High or whatever it is. Like, Have you ever seen this high school tape?
No.
It's like a fucking upward basketball league. It's fucking embarrassing. So, like, I get the frustration they didn't score a lot of points. Kentucky come off a bye week. It's on the road. Whatever excuse you want to make. I watched a much better Georgia team a year ago and go there and struggle 13-12 in a close win. So I get it. The idea that he should take away play calling duties from himself is just so incredibly stupid. Like there's not a better track record and a better offensive mind than Steve Sarkisian calling plays. It's him, Kiffin, and Ryan Day, and the rest of it, it's not really close. Like, I mean, like, I don't know why that would even be suggested.
What about Heupel? What about Napier? What about Shula?
I would put Heupel on tier two. I would put Heupel on tier two, especially okay. on script. I put Buster Faulkner up there in terms of creativity. I put Mike Bobo up there in terms of if you want a quarterback or, I mean,
what about Grubbs?
Just throw screen passes. Mm-hmm. Well, you see Mike Bobo's offense, brother. But no, it was Arch adopted as the greatest comment that has ever been put in this fucking chat. How has no one said that?
Oh, they say it every week.
Oh, do they?
There was another one. I'll tell you off air. I didn't want to read it on here.
Eating contest with Cousin Shane and Mike Elko. First off, let me just explain something, guys. I made a joke about myself and my weight. Doesn't mean you can. And I love Shane, but I'm not fucking Shane and Mike Elko big. Dicks.
Hey, so
is he still playing golf?
Yeah, I don't think today he's a little bit under the weather, but
it's my favorite content of the entire offseason, dude. It's my favorite content of the offseason.
I'll let him know. Hey, so aside from A&M LSU, what's the best game on the docket this weekend in the SEC?
Dude, it's Vandy Mizzou. That's going to be such a good game. That's going to be such a good game. The one that not enough people are talking about for whatever reason is Oklahoma Ole Miss. I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, I mean, 13 versus 8, again, a noon kickoff. That's going to be a great game. I cannot wait to see that. But I think it's so, like, I think that'll be the most interesting matchup because Ole Miss's offense going up against a really good Oklahoma defense. I personally like Ole Miss in that game. I just think that they're better offensively and more equipped to score. I think the LSU A&M game is going to be good. But that Vandy Mizzou game, man, like the fact that the winner of that game has an inside track to the cultural playoff is awesome. I mean, it's awesome. It's awesome. So I'm very excited about that. And I think that it's interesting also that Vegas has them as a 2.5 point favorite because them being a 2.5 point favorite means I just assumed that this would be another thing where they get kind of dismissed or run over because of the logo, but they're going up against the only other logo in the conference that gets disrespected more, which is Mizzou.
If there's one game, and you feel free to change your opinion, we're not holding you to it, but is there one game that you're like pretty confident you know the winner as of right now?
Alabama over South Carolina is probably going to be. I mean, I think that Auburn game is kind of interesting. I mean, that one's kind of interesting. Yeah. I mean, the Texas game at State. I mean, there's some really good football on this weekend, man. There's some really good games on. So I think it's going to be – I tell you what, man, everyone talked about, including myself, how frustrated they were. Peyton, I don't want to be negative here, but I don't know if they all of a sudden have a rushing attack. They just played
it's
a –
more about Carolina?
Yeah, I think that might have been more on South Carolina, but, you know, we'll see. I think I was one of the many that complained about the whole – SEC and CBS thing and blah, blah, blah. But how fucking good has this been, Mike, where every week we get like from 12 to 11, or as you would always say, 6 to midnight with how you live. is that like we have just good football on all fucking day. And I'll tell you that this whole Central Time Zone thing is fucking awesome. It is awesome. I mean, it's everything starts right away. It's great.
Yeah, it can't be beat. It was a game changer when I moved to Nashville, I'll tell you that. But yeah. Shout out, I also want to shout out SEC Sean. I believe he's our cousin picker this week. So shout out, Sean. He gifted a membership to Spence Gibbs. Spence, we appreciate you, buddy. Welcome to the family. Any closing thoughts, Marler, as we get you out the door here?
I'm going to go get some Ozempic, and I'll talk to you next week. No, I appreciate you guys. Awesome. For real, though, check out the other podcasts. And send us a sub. It would be great.
How'd you get on with those Oklahoma guys?
They all just started reaching out to me. You know what's funny, Mike, is that I kind of expected that to be the case this week because of who South Carolina's playing.
Right.
And, man, they are – that is not the case. That is not the case.
Who's the next coach fired?
Who's the next coach fired?
In the SEC.
I think probably the one that makes the most sense, it's probably fucking what's his name? Stoops.
Yeah. Before Freeze, huh?
Oh, no, Freeze. Because I think Stoops is going to step. I think Stoops is going to do something where he's like going to step down. Or because I think he's just fucking over it. Like, I think he's so over
Emily's
it.
Yelling at the screen.
Yeah.
Freeze.
No, it's got to be Freeze. You're right. The Freeze thing is so, it's so weird. It's so weird to me that Auburn, like, I saw a report last week that somebody said, I don't know how real it was on Twitter, but it was like, well, you know, the administration still believes in Freeze because they're 3-3, but they should be 5-1. I just, like,
who? You know, that's that same guy. I mean, again, his name's Philip Marshall. I'm sure he's a nice man. He would bash the hell out of Freeze when he was at Ole Miss, of course.
Philip Marshall.
And then when the day Hugh Freeze got hired, he wrote a big column. I have friends that hire hookers. I shit you not. That is still, you can find it in the archives at 24/7. He's like, you know, we all hire hookers, basically.
What? I didn't know me and Philip Marshall should have been hanging out, brother. Come on now. Here we go. That's wild. That's a wild thing to say.
I swear to God, that's a real thing.
He's just so fucking bad. And the way he's handled his business, I think, full disclosure, and Emily Earmuffin, I thought he would be the best fit for Auburn because this, like, not trying to be a dick, but also kind of trying to be a dick. There's not a fan base that talks more about how morally sound and superior they are to others in this conference than Auburn. It is very much it's different now that you don't get it, but we're above this. We say a creed. We believe in Auburn. We love it. And it's a great fan base. They are the most loyal fan base, I think, in the entire country, and they show up week after week. I got to go to that Cadillac game against A&M in 2022. Unreal. Unreal with two, like, 4-5 teams. But that whole attitude where you're holier than now and then still paying for Cam Newton and having the drunk as a coach with Pat Dye and all that kind of shit, like, you're just like the rest of us. To go hire Hugh Freeze, I thought I was like, oh my God, the swindler meets the other swindler. Like, this is like, I mean, this is incredible. These are two fucking TV evangelists that are somehow joined together to make an even bigger TV evangelist. And it has not worked out well. It's kind of crazy.
I hate it. I hate it for it. But hey, we appreciate you, buddy.
Yeah, man.
Would you like to give out your tag or anything before you jump off the line here?
Vern_Funquist on Twitter and Locked On Gamecocks and Louisiana Sports on that.
And hopefully you'll have me back on your show. It's like,
yeah,
it's like pulling teeth to get you to show up for your own show. But hopefully I'll be back on it this week.
I appreciate it, brother. I'll talk to you later. Go Bobcats.
Bye-bye. We'll catch you tonight. Steven Lassen, 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 Central. Bye-bye.
Hey, buddy. This beer's for you, Mike, and Cousin Shane. That SEC podcast loves the pirate, and the pirate loves that SEC podcast. Hail State.